You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm Marcy Silman. It's not always easy to have a conversation with somebody you disagree with, especially when you're talking about personal fundamental beliefs.
But the three interfaith amigos have been doing it for over 12 and a half years. Rabbi Ted Falcon, Pastor Don McKenzie, and Imam Jamal Rahman have come up with the five stages they believe lead to successful interfaith dialogue. They explained the stages to Steve Scheer. Rabbi Ted Falcon said the most people are getting it wrong from the start.
People generally start by getting together and talking about things that they agree upon or things they disagree upon, and it doesn't go real far. You know, you have nice gatherings, you say nice things, it's over. We found that the place to start is not with talking about your faith tradition or talking about your religion, but talking about your own story. In other words, getting to know each other as human beings. So that religion might be part of the discussion, but it's how does religion affect my life? How do my views now, for example, differ from what they were when I was a child? Are there any points in my life where something happened that changed the way I experience my connection to faith or my connection to religion? That's the kind of thing to start with. And then the second stage is to look at, okay, if I look at my tradition, my understanding of my tradition, what do I see as the core teaching? Like, what's the main core teaching of my tradition? And share that with each other. Just like Gandhi said it was important for a pluralistic society to work, we had to have an appreciative understanding of the core teachings of the various traditions.
And the third stage is in the context of that. And the core teachings, by the way, that we have identified are oneness in Judaism, unconditional love in Christianity, and compassion in Islam. So as we began to get to know each other and so forth, we began to wonder how we would make judgments about which parts of our traditions were good and maybe which parts weren't so good. How do we do that? I mean, is it just personal prejudice? And so by identifying these core teachings, we also realize there are particulars in our traditions, verses and practices, that are consistent with them. And there are other particulars that are inconsistent with the core teachings that we have identified. In other words, this is the way this makes sense to us. And when we go and speak to people, we encourage them to ask themselves, what do you think the core teaching of your tradition is? And by the way, when we say tradition, we mean any path that provides purpose and meaning and wishes to contribute to the common good. What is the central teaching of that tradition? And think about the particular aspects of your tradition and think about which ones are consistent and also which ones are not. And as you know, some of those which are inconsistent have been the source of suffering.
And the fourth stage, only after we have developed a relationship, friendship, there is some trust, there's a willingness, and there is a capacity to be vulnerable. The fourth stage is about the willingness to enter into more difficult conversations. For example, we have gone all over the U.S. We see many, many Abrahamic organizations. They have wonderful get-togethers, and you know the common saying is when they share over food and music, their different religions, the talk is ridiculously nice. But the moment they go home, the Muslims become terrorists, the Christians become liars, and the Jews become occupiers. Why? Because there isn't that connection of a personal relationship. Once that is there, then there is a willingness to talk about difficult topics. These organizations, the moment the question of the conflict of Israel-Palestine comes up, it's over. There's a withdrawal. With us three, because it's a personal relationship and a friendship, I shall say very politely, I and Rabbi Ted have had vigorous conversations, sometimes so vigorous the Christian pastor had to intervene. But because we have a friendship, the conversation continues. So that's the fourth stage. The fifth stage, Gandhi also said that use your being as a laboratory. And once you have that feeling of relationship and trust, you will find, as you become open to the beauty and wisdom of other traditions, you can experience the divine through the rituals and practices of another's tradition. So we have found that ourselves, by studying other traditions, by experiencing other traditions, we have sometimes incorporated rituals and practices into our own tradition. That is why there's a common saying, interfaith is not about conversion. It is about completion, becoming a more complete, developed human being.
And ultimately, the motivation for interfaith dialogue is not just to get us talking to each other, but to provide one of the foundations upon which we can together collaborate on the major issues facing our time, that we need to find ways of collaborating.
Absolutely.
On.
Yes.
We're talking with Imam Jamal Rahman, Rabbi Ted Falcon, and Pastor Don McKenzie. They're the three interfaith amigos. I mean, you argue sometimes, or vigorous debates about...
Well, look, sometimes he's wrong.
It's because you're in the political realm.
Yes.
But you're talking about personal connections that make it possible, and then a spiritual undergirding. So I'm going to give you here's the fourth chair here. Scientists talk about seeking truth, right? That's their operating paradigm, yeah. The good ones. So if there are truths and untruths, the science would say, all right, well, I'm going to ferret these out. And so what do you say to those scientists? What's the connecting dialogue that you have with a scientist who said, well, you have some ideas over here that are about faith, but they're not science. And these other ideas that you have, 6,000 years old to create the world, these are untruths that are being propagated at much too far a rate. How can we seek common, what's the common ground we can seek?
You know, there's a history to all this, of course, that hundreds of years ago, the Christian church claimed it had the truth and tried to put down any scientific endeavor for fear that the truth that might discover would undermine the church's truth. And so if I were a scientist, I would be an heir to that rejection. And so I think there, in many ways, it's hard. That's part of the history of this. It's hard for one side to hear the other. In some ways, we would suggest each side needs to get to know the other before these arguments can happen, and then start bringing in the kinds of things my colleagues are talking about, because there are intersections. But historically, the scientists have thrown out religion, and many religionists have thrown out science. And it's a shame, because both have enormously important things to offer.
We also think that's a difference between religion and spirituality. Because often religion, the religious institutions, have a kind of faith commitment that does stand outside of science. You know, the argument about creationism is not so much a spiritual argument. It's an argument from, hey, this is our belief system, and we cling to that, and we read the text as some kind of history book rather than a metaphor, rather than a book filled with metaphors of the spiritual quest. You know, there's a kind of what we see as a confusion there.
I think there's a great danger which is common both to people who follow the scientific path or who follow the religious path in giving too much authority to scientific experts or religious experts. It's like the wonderful saying, if you hear a bird in song, do you have a need to ask it for its credentials? No, you just experience that. There's a wonderful story in Islam about the mullah who is gravely ill, and the wife is wailing away, and now here comes in the authority, the medical doctor. He examines the mullah at length and turns to the wife and says very eloquently, "Oh, honorable wife of the mullah, I'm so sorry to inform you, your husband is dead. His soul has flown into the bosom of God." But the mullah is not dead. And he's feebly saying, "I'm alive, I'm alive." And the wife says, "Quiet, don't argue with the doctor." So we give our power away, whether it's religious experts and authorities or scientific experts. And that's something to be very careful about. What is our own personal experience? I think where spirituality comes in is that unless it is your own personal taste or experience of it, It is not an inner knowing. It is just a theory.
The three interfaith amigos talked about the keys to successful interfaith and intellectual dialogue with our colleague Steve Scher. It's The Record.